you say you can easily sweep things under the rug in your life? Welcome to the Parable Podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Zapchank, and right now you're going to meet Director and Engagement Strategist for Safe Families, Anna Maria Matty, share about how she had to be okay with God's direction in her life.
God, even if he does not heal my marriage, my husband's addiction, even if it got to the point he didn't survive, because there were times that I thought he may pass away. And I remember one day just sitting like on my knees in my room, just saying, God, don't.
Here's my conversation with Anna Maria Matty. Friend Anna Maria, we have recently connected through Women's Speaker Collective. It is a global initiative of empowering women, and it's like everywhere. However, we are excited because we were able to be like connected because we're in the same area. So we've already been out for coffee, and you just have such warmth and like a desire to connect people. So I'm excited to talk to you today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I was scrolling through your Instagram because that's what I do. And I noticed you and your family, you guys went to Italy like within the last year. I would love to go there too. So next time you go, include me in your family trip. But like, I'd love to know you planned it, and was it everything that you had hoped it would be? What was your like most amazing moments there?
It's been 38 years and counting since I wanted to go. My whole family, like I'm 100% Italian, never been. And everyone's like, you've never been to Italy? Like my mom, you know, was born there, everything. So just getting there was just amazing. And then just to be able to learn about my culture up close, like, you know, my family's very Italian, but just to get to see it personally was just huge. And then to watch it through my kids' eyes as well,
yeah.
You know, and them getting to learn a little bit about their heritage. I love planning trips. Like, I think I'm a trip junkie. Like, I just love planning them.
So, yeah.
That in itself was really fun. Like, just figuring out where we want to go. And so we went, you know, to Rome, and I had just taken a historical theology class. So it was fun to like watch that come alive. And then going to our favorite was Cinque Terre, which is like five towns off the coast. And we got to hike and look at just some of the beauty that lies there, and just take Emma. I love nature, so just stepping back and getting away for a while with the family and just seeing something we've never seen before and exploring. We love doing that, and it brings our family closer together. So I could go on for hours about it, so I won't, but it was just amazing.
Well, I think that's the great thing about trips in general, is that whoever you're with, even if you're with yourself, like if it's a solo trip, and I know that's scary for some people, but like just having that connectivity, that time away, it is a different space. You could do that anywhere. So that's amazing. And I'm sure the food was on par while in Italy as well.
It sure was.
Yeah. So you are a director and engagement strategist for Safe Families, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. You've worked in groups ministry before. And also, you are about to get your degree at seminary. So tell me, why go back to seminary? What was that about?
Honestly, for me, it's been a 10-year journey. I actually started going back to school. So part of my story, just growing up, I had to drop out of college at 19. And I had never gotten my degree, but God had given me this beautiful opportunity to be developed by leaders in the church. And I had found along the way. I started going to school for teaching, actually, online. And then after my kids were born and everything, and then I was like, oh no, God's wrecking me for ministry. Like, God's calling me to this. What does this mean? And so I had switched my degree. I always said by the time I'm 40, I want to get my degree. And so that's where it is. And I just love learning about the Bible. It's so funny because when I first started, they were like, oh, you have to take a New and an Old Testament class. And I was like, that's not part of my degree program. Like, why do I have to do that? And then I was upset about it. And then I fell in love with it and changed my whole degree to theology and biblical studies. And it's been cool. And I will say doing it this way has actually allowed the classes to come to life and be more applicable with what I'm doing in the real world. So I'm really grateful for the time.
Well, even though it's been a bit, has there been something that has surprised you, or I'm sure there's multiple things that you've learned about the Bible, but how God has just kind of changed your perspective a little bit?
I do feel that, you know, there's book knowledge and then mm-hmm. there's real world knowledge, and mm-hmm. both are important. They really mm-hmm. are. But how do you live out the Bible and also understand it contextually has mm-hmm. been beautiful. I feel like if I had time to really reflect on this, I would probably know more. But off the top of my head, it's been really cool to really learn how to dissect the context and to learn the history around it and to really question my own faith. Like it mm-hmm. has helped my own perspectives come alive of, is this really what I believe? And why yeah. do I believe this? And if I have questions, like I can dig into actual theological studies and context. Like I took a Christian ethics class and I yeah. fell in love with it because I'm like yeah. every hot topic. At first I was so scared. I was like, I don't know if I want to dig into this with classmates, but every hot topic out there we discussed and how it yeah. links to the Bible. But I realized even in my own life and journey, like, oh, do I really believe that? Like, mm-hmm. why do I believe that? And yeah. so just digging in, it's just been, I honestly, it's been a gift.
I think, you know, the learning curve never stops for us. And you're right. It is like actual real world knowledge. Once you have proximity with people, whether you're in ministry or you're trying to find a new church, like there is just so much that we're constantly consuming and it's a learning journey. So I'd love for you to speak into, like, have you always known Jesus? Has he been a part of your life? Was that something that came later for you?
I grew up going to a Catholic school up until fifth grade. And so when, you know, I went to Catholic school, it was, you know, I knew of Jesus. I understood him, but I understood him far away, God. Yeah. That's kind of how I looked at him and do the right thing. And no knock on the Catholic Church, but, you know, there's some beauty to it as well. But I also didn't understand the personal relationship with him.
Yeah.
And then later on in life, you know, we had left that school, went to a public school and just didn't go to church for a while. And then had some hardship in my own family and I rebelled pretty badly in high school. Yeah. So I went out and did everything. I gave my mom and dad a run for their money and just put it that way. And then 19 years old, I was pregnant and my mom and I had a falling out for a little while. We are in a much better place today, but I was going to a pregnancy center and just looking for love is what I realized. Yeah. And she would tell me about the love of Jesus every time I would go and show me where the baby was and the progress of where he was at. And I'd leave with diapers, but I'd go every single week. And honestly, I was really drawn in hindsight to her compassion and love and care for me. And I saw Jesus in her and she would continually invite me to church. And then I went to the doctor and found out I had a 13 centimeter cyst on my left ovary, size of a grapefruit. And they're like, you can lose the baby, you can lose your ovary, all these things. And I was terrified. Like I'd never had a surgery or anything. And some voices in my life said, oh, that's a sign. You know, you're 19. The guy's not really great for you. Like it's time to be done. And I went to church and I just remember weeping at the altar. I don't even remember what the message was about. This lady, Becky, had invited me to church and I was just weeping. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the service, they all came around me. They're like, okay, this, something's going on with this woman. And they prayed with me, anointed my head with oil. And this actually was the day before my surgery.
Wow.
And that night, I really accepted Christ. Like I understood, I was at my all-time low. I was on my own, trying to figure out, like having to live on my own. 19, I had to drop out of school because of my surgery. And I felt the love of Christ just flood in at my lowest point. And I was like, okay, this is what his love really means at my all-time low. He was there.
Anna Maria, thank you so much for sharing that, because I think, you know, all of us can relate to having like this moment where we feel that we're not loved, where we are just desperately searching for something beyond ourselves. And I'm so glad for women like Becky that like walked alongside of you and gave you diapers and, you know, just little bits at a time to bring you to a moment of realization, like, I need this relationship. I can't do this on my own. So that's a beautiful story. It kind of connects to, I saw what you had wrote a post for Women Speaker Collective about Mary Magdalene. And I was going through your questions on there. I think it connects to this moment for you. And you ask the reader, it says, where might you need to show up so that you can bear witness to the new thing that God is doing? And I think in that moment, God was doing a new thing in you. Yes, you had a falling out with family, you just felt like at your lowest. But even in that, even so, he said, I'm still doing a new thing in your life. And that's amazing. And I know we're going to hear more about it. So, yeah. Anna Maria, thank you. Can you share with us a little bit more of your parable story today?
So now you know a little bit about how I came to know Christ, but then if you fast forward several years, I was at another pivotal point of my life where I had realized I was sweeping everything under the rug, and I, you know, knew Jesus, knew the love of Jesus, but really didn't understand how to walk with Jesus. And I thought I did. I was confused. But I think what one of the things I had learned growing up was to just make sure that everything looked okay on the outside. Yeah. And wanted to fit in, even in church, actually, especially in church. I mm-hmm. felt that I was not, subconsciously, I couldn't have named this then, but I was not good enough. Mm-hmm. I was not good enough to be my full self, that I would be judged if people knew the real me, and that I had to show up a different way. And so my husband and I, he actually adopted my son, so that I was pregnant mm-hmm. at 19, mm-hmm. and then a few years later ran into my now husband. And we started connecting. We ended up working next to each other, all these things. We knew each other from high school. And he and I just reconnected. And he would always try to talk to me and talk about Kyle. And he called me one day saying Happy Mother's Day. And I thought it was the cutest thing because he was like stuttering and nervous. And, and all these. So we ended up getting together. And he actually, him and Kyle, like just bonded when I finally introduced him to my son, Kyle, who's now 19, that same wow. baby that from that. Yeah. And he taught him how to walk. Kyle was a late walker. And he, like, they just had this bond. Like, I couldn't get him to walk. The kid didn't want to walk. Brian taught him how to walk. And just amazing. 15 months. Just watching their bond and everything. Eventually, he adopted him. We got married. And it was awesome. But I remember right before we got married, I called that lady, Becky. And I was like, yeah, I met this guy. And he's great. And him and Kyle love each other. And she said, oh, is he a Christian? And I was like, yeah. I mean, his family goes to a Catholic church. Yeah. Yeah. Like, so long story short, I kind of ignored that piece of it, and I'll just yeah. be honest. So both of us, though, were rebels in high school. And yeah. in my mind, I thought, okay, well, I was a rebel in high school, and I also was not perfect at 19 with a child. So I also slipped back into some of my old ways. And so did he. But I thought, oh, well, as my son gets older, I'm going to start going back to church, and we're going to just start living this great life. And I'm going to put that life behind me. You know, now I'm a mom, and now I'm married. And I thought, well, he's going to think the same thing.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, of course, right? Like, why wouldn't he think the same thing? Like, that's what I'm thinking. And so I realized that some of the things that I did, you know, we would drink a lot. I did have about getting into drugs in high school and things like that. And I thought, okay, all of that's in our past now. You know, Brian will think the same. And I realized over time that, no, he actually had addiction to a lot of these things, a lot of these substances. And it became more of him trying to live a double life where I wanted to go to church all the time and I wanted to grow in my faith. And I had this like new, like insatiable love for Jesus and wanted to know what it meant now to walk with him. Yeah. And every time it felt like God was calling me into something for ministry or just to do a little thing, my husband would relapse. Mm-hmm. And so behind closed doors, what this looked like was, it was pain medication was the biggest vice, I would say. Mm-hmm. I would find a pill and he would like admit it or deny it, one of the two. And then I would get all upset. Then he would eventually apologize. And then the next day, everything would be back to normal. And I would think, okay, now it's going to be done until the next time I found a pill. And I tried entering into church. I remember this feeling like we have to have it all together. Like my marriage has to look perfect. You know, eventually we had a second child. So we have two boys together. Like we are the perfect family. Everybody thought we were like such a good couple on the outside. But in the inside, I was slowly dying inside. And he was too. We both were. And it was the pivotal moment in my parable story is really my rock bottom, where I found myself realizing that I could no longer sweep things under the rug. I needed to go through this and I needed to face this if I want anything to change. And that required my own work, and that I wanted to fix him. I was so focused on fixing my husband so that we could have this perfect life. And I realized I had to look at my own story and my own stuff. And I had a big part to contribute to this, which I was like, what? But I remember being in a recovery program at our church and just bawling one night because I had found out that my husband had, and again, this is things that he would totally admit and I have permission to share, but that he had stolen some jewelry from my family. And I was like, what? Like, that was like, to me, like, how dare you? Mm-hmm. That was my rock bottom. Like, there's a problem. Yeah. So I just remember weeping and saying, I feel called to ministry. I want to do all these things. I felt like called to create community and all of this. And my husband just can't get it together. And now I was the first time I felt, okay, I'm going to be a single mom. And so walking through that, learning how to accept pain, you know, as the pathway to peace, you know, it's in the serenity prayer, but it really was, how do I sit in this and be real and authentic with my feelings and what's happening? And is the church going to reject me in all of this? That was a huge fear, is that people would reject me in what I thought was good enough. So in that process, I had to uncover what that was in me, what that was in, of why I wanted to act like everything was okay. What was I running from? And underneath it all, I didn't want to get a divorce. I wanted to fit into this, what I thought was cookie cutter church lifestyle. And it was devastating. So I had to look at my own codependency and realize that I was codependent. I wanted to fix, I wanted to control, and all these areas of my life that I had really overworked, gone ahead of God, trying to make it my way, not his way. And I thought this was his way, but I'm over here trying to create what is my way, or what I think is his way in my mind, instead of submitting and surrendering to the Lord and trusting what his word says, trusting that he is going to make all things right, that he is going to work all things together for good, even though this looks really scary. And so I had to have some strong women come around me that have been there, that have walked this path. And I'm so blessed that they did and put me in my place to realize that I can do it, that I had to find, like, I had to really dig deep and really understand that my identity in Christ and who I was, and that he will be with me in the storm, and this is the only way through. Yeah. And so part of that was creating boundaries. And my husband will always tell everybody, boundaries suck, but excuse my language, but they're needed. And he had to leave. I had to ask him to leave our home for the safety of our children. And it was 2 years of being separated and moving out of our house that we had finally gotten into a tiny apartment, losing my job, having to figure out another job, my car breaking down on the expressway, not knowing how to even get to work. I lost everything it just kept getting worse as I surrendered. And I said, God, what's happening? I'm surrendering. I'm doing the work. Like, what is going on? Like, I would throw temper tantrums all the time. And it was tough. But then, and at first, when I created the boundaries, I would say to, you know, my sponsor in the recovery program and to some Christian women walking around me, like, look, I did what you asked me to do, and he's getting worse. Yeah. And they were like, this isn't about him. This is about you and your walk and your relationship. And to realize that I had to, I had to look at that and be okay asking the question, do I trust God even if he does not heal my marriage, my husband's addiction, even if it got to the point he didn't survive, because there were times that I thought he may pass away. And I remember one day just sitting like on my knees in my room, just saying, God, don't let me attend his funeral. Don't. And I just was picturing his funeral because it got so bad. It's actually interesting. That very night, my husband had called me, and my kids were at a Christian camp, and I went to one of their classes there. They had adult classes, and I just ended up going. And I sat next to a director of an addictions program, a Christian addictions program. It was a Bible program. And I sat next to the wife. And so we were chatting, and she's like, oh, yeah, my husband's a director. And I was like, what? It was a free program. It was a year program. And so my husband had called me that night and I was like, if you really wanted to change, you would, because he had tried 30-day programs and 60-day programs. Mm-hmm. And I was just like accepting the reality that he will never change. And then next morning he looked up that program that I told him about. And he went.
Wow.
He went and he did the work. And I had to be okay before he did the work, knowing that God was going to be with me and he was going to work all things together for good, even if it wasn't the way I had hoped or pictured it.
Mm-hmm. And you guys are still together.
We are. So we separated for 2 years. And then by the grace of God, in 2017, we renewed our wedding vows. And that was our 10-year anniversary. We renewed our wedding vows. And he is a different man. He is a different man. And God has really broke us both down to build us up in a new way. And if you talk to either of us, we're all about, like, we want to be real and authentic. We want to get to the bottom of it. Like, we don't beat around the bush. We can smell fake from a mile away. And that's only because of where we've been, right?
Yeah.
And we know that that's only going to lead to hardship. And we, God is so good. So actually today is our 16-year wedding anniversary.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And he is 7 years sober. So God is so good. I feel like God repaid us for the years the locusts have eaten. He's so good.
Yeah, he is good. Well, I definitely have a lot of questions, like how all of these connect and how this relates back to us, because I think so many of us do sweep things under the rug, and especially with the idea of addiction or just something that other people are going through. We want to always be like, well, they're the problem, when we really have to reflect and look inward at the same time. Not to say that our journeys are the same, but we all have something that we have this rebellious spirit about us that we want to say, like, oh, I'm the good one. So you said, you know, you rebelled as a child. How was it uncovering and recognizing that you have this? Because I think I have a rebellious streak at some time. People tell me not to do something, I'm like, well, I'm going to show you that I can do it. So talk to me a little bit about realizing, like, oh, wow, like, I have to work on removing that constantly in my life.
We are all broken. We all fall short of from the glory of God. And I think, I mean, those verses about looking at the plank, taking the plank out of your own eye, there's a pride piece. I can have it all together. And really, we don't. And what does that look like? And what is God really asking us to do? Like, when you strip all of that away, who are you? When you strip all of the things that you want and desire and picture and hope for and plan, if those things weren't there, would you still be just as in love with Jesus?
Yeah.
Would you still be following him in the way that you are now if all of your desires were stripped away? I think part of that is looking back, not to stay there, but looking back into our family of origin and in our story. And what are the things that we believed growing up that were not of God, that we are still believing, that we're still carrying today?
I'd love for you to speak into codependency, because one, that's a big word. People might not be familiar with what that is. And also, when they think of codependency, they're like, well, I don't have an addiction. So what am I really codependent of? So tell me what you learned about that, and then how you realized that that was a part of your life.
Oh, yeah, I struggled. I did not, you know, my rebellious spirit was like, I am not codependent. Until I read Codependency No More by Melody Beattie, I had a whole breakdown on chapter 4. If you look at chapter 4, it has all the ideas. Everybody, you realize everybody's codependent. And I just remember one day saying, I'm codependent. Like, I finally surrendered it. But really, it's, what are you putting before Christ? Is how I would identify it in a nutshell. Is it social media? Is it a person? Is it what other people think of you? Is it control?
Yeah.
There are so many things. And I do really feel like we all can have some type of codependent spirit where we are really thriving off of the needs of another. We're trying to control or fix when really we are not the controllers. We are not the fixers, right? Christ is. And how do we just remain? How do we stay present and allow God to do that work and surrender each and every moment and every day to what he wants to do in us versus trying to get ahead of him? Mm-hmm. And I think as a codependent, this will still happen with me. I haven't arrived, but how do I realize and stop and say, oh, I'm going ahead of God now. Like I'm trying to do this in my own strength versus his strength. And I am now attached to a relationship, or I am attached to what other people think, or I'm attached to trying to fix or control this situation because in the name of justice. And I mean, yes, justice can be holy and all of that. And I don't mean to discredit justice, but how do I do that in a way that is God honoring and in a way that he's asking me to?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's so good. So you had mentioned, like, as you were walking through this process, you are a Christian, you and your husband, you're together. There's things that are happening within your marriage and you're sweeping it under the rug. And you're just realizing, like, am I really not good enough to be in this church space? Are people going to judge me? Like, I'd love to hear if that was just like a lot of internal, or were you feeling that on both ends? Because once you did share, I'm assuming you shared it with someone, like, how did the church surround you? Was that the reaction that you thought you would get?
That's a great question. I think it was a little bit of both. Our story was pretty public because I had just entered into ministry part-time. Mm-hmm. And as I entered into ministry, I was creating events and gathering people, and God was using me, and I was like on fire and starting to realize what God had called me to do. And every time a big event would happen or people would come to know Jesus or just amazing things that God would do through me, and I was realizing like, oh, God's using me, my husband would relapse. And so I remember going to the person that had hired me and said, hey, look, this is where we're at. My husband is still not well, and you probably want to, you know, let me go now and take myself out of ministry. And it had been like a year process of praying to get into ministry. And he said, no, you've come this far. You guys are being honest. You're doing the right work. But it was public. And there were some people that were amazing and surrounded me and helped me to realize that it doesn't matter what other people think, that this is the church and your brokenness is welcome here. And the church is a hospital for a broken. Mm-hmm. And there were other well-meaning people that I would say looked at me like I had a third eye. I realized, oh, this isn't the place for me. Part of it was my own insecurity. It was a mixture. And then part of it was there were some hurtful comments. I will say I was hurt in the church as well. Yeah. And judged, and it developed a holy discontent in me, actually, where I felt like in one area, there was just such beauty and being honest and raw and authentic and allowing God to come in and learning what that felt like. And another area, it felt like you had to strive and perform and look a certain part and be a certain way. Mm-hmm. And that today has put like a fire in me. Of what does it look like to go and get proximate to the situation, not just like a one-time touch of, oh yeah, let me just pray with you, or I'll be praying for you, or let me just pretend like, or even like check your face when you're in ministry, like make sure somebody says something that is so different, like check your face, because that can really hurt somebody if you're like, what?
Yeah.
And just how do we minister well to those that have different experiences and have gone through hardship and have seen things and may have not been a pastor's kid and grown up in the church? I mean, really, the church is a hospital for the broken, right? Mm-hmm. How do we come alongside those people well? How do we find them and help them to realize that they're welcome in the church? Mm-hmm. Because many will not step in the church because they feel that same feeling that I felt of, I have to have it all together.
I think for me, I've recognized over the years, and I think I'm never going to get it right, but I'm constantly growing up the scale of like what sin is, of what our culture or what maybe the churches that we've grown up in. Well, if somebody has an addiction, like, oh, wow. But if we all had like these bags on our back and it just like all of our sin, like we all have like a lot of sin bags. So, yes. I mean, it's just, it's there. It's just, it manifests in different areas. And so, again, are we choosing to be real? Are we sweeping things under the rug, or are we kind of just being like, hey, this is the honest truth of where I'm at in my relationship? And if we have safe people to talk to, you know, how can we build bridges and build this beautiful community that God wants to build with a bunch of broken people?
And I think it lies in judgment. Our judgment too. Like, do we have a critical spirit? Are we so critical of others? And what is it in us that's causing us to be critical? Like, looking at our own, okay, that's bothering me right now. And maybe it's bothering you for a reason. And if somebody else's actions or reactions or story is bothering you, why? Yeah. What is it in you and in your story that it's rubbing up against? Mm-hmm. And what might God want to do in you in that process, yeah, so that you can love better and love well, love by observing it and by seeing them the way Jesus would, and then engaging in a way that is not with our baggage on our back, yeah, right? Like, that is, yeah, engaging in the way of Christ.
Well, Anna, before we wrap up, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the organization you work for called Safe Families, just in case people haven't heard of it before. I really love their mission, and I'd love for you to share how you got connected with them.
I started serving with Safe Families for Children. They were a ministry connected to our church at the time, and started hosting children. And it was really, my husband and I were in that season, like I said, of, you know, we were blessed to be a blessing. Like, God had repaid us for the years the locusts have eaten, and we're in this now beautiful house. And it was just amazing what God had done in and through us and through that struggle after we actually sat and looked at our stuff and did our work, right? What God, yeah, did. And he kept his promises, right? But now it's like, okay, I was a pastor in groups and doing all these things, but there was also this, like, I still didn't feel proximate enough to go back into where I was to minister to that area. So we started serving and hosting. Our first one was a precious little girl, and just allowing God to wreck us and get proximate, mm-hmm, with other families, mm-hmm, who are struggling and who are in hardship in a hard season. And what Safe Families for Children is it's an organization that actually prevents kids from going into the foster care system. And it, mm-hmm, creates a circle of support through the local church to wrap around families that may not have family support or resources. They might be living in poverty. A lot of it is systemic poverty, generational trauma, a lot of different things that they may be going through. Not all stories similar to mine. Some, yes, yeah, some no, but a lot of them are single moms as well. Mm-hmm. And as we continue to serve, I just continue to feel this pull to get even more proximate to the situation. Mm-hmm. So a year and a half ago, I felt led to leave my role at the church, which was a wonderful role and comfy in all of its, mm-hmm, ways, I'll say. And then God was just like, no, this is where I want you right now. So, mm-hmm, I wrestled with him a bit and then came on staff here at Safe Families. And it has been a blessing to just help engage our volunteers through local churches to create ministries to love their neighbor in this way. And it's not a one-time serve. One-time serves are a great way to initially start the conversation, but it is more of a getting proximate with the family, somebody that is different than you, somebody that has a very different life experience than you, and loving them well.
I think that's the beautiful thing, because we think, like, when kids are in a situation where they are unsafe, they're like, oh, well, we need to get them away from this. They need to be in the foster care system. But what I've started to learn is, like, the goal is to reconcile and restore family relationships. So, you know, how can organizations like Safe Families or the church community, again, be more than a one-time thing and really envelop them with strategy, with love, with care? And I love that. I really love the work you're doing.
I will add, though, that there is a place for foster care. And, mm-hmm, our founder worked for Lydia Home, Dave Anderson, and he was a forensic psychologist. And he kept seeing situations that were too little, too late at that, yeah, end of things. And so, yeah, how it developed was really that there is a way, like, if you think of a train, a freight train headed towards, mm-hmm, the red zone, right, headed to, mm-hmm, crash. And this is a way to prevent that, where there might not have the resources. A lot of it was lack of support before it got to physical abuse. A lot of it was these parents didn't have any resources, like a break at all. And they're going fast into the red zone without any help. And this is that disruption of that so that it doesn't crash.
So Anna Maria, because of your work at Safe Families, you identified a problem that was recurring. Can you explain what came out of that for you?
Yeah. So many of our families are single parents and they are struggling with housing instability and really just struggling to find a stable place to call home. And that was part of the reason that kept them in really a survival mode and a reactive mode and kept their kids continuing to need hosting because they couldn't find shelters. Most shelters are constantly full or they're couch surfing or whatever that might be. And so I started looking into this some more as we were trying to help some of these families who are very hardworking parents and really just need to catch a break. And I started realizing that in 2023, for the median middle class income in our area in Illinois and Lake County is $75,000. And that's just middle class medium income. For an average 3-bedroom apartment is between $2,700 to $3,000 a month. And so when you're applying for housing for rent, you need to be making 3 times the amount of rent, which means that for a 3-bedroom, someone would need to be making, if it was at the low end, conservative, $2,700 a month, they would need to be making $97,200 per year. And again, we're dealing with parents that there's a lot of generational poverty, housing instability, sometimes systemic injustices. Many of our parents have grown out of the foster care system themselves and really just don't have that family support that they would love to have and that we're helping to provide. So then a 2-bedroom, same thing. They would have to be making, like, an average rent is $2,200 for a 2-bedroom. They'd have to be making $79,200 a month for that. And then median income for middle class is $75,000. Mm-hmm. So just looking at that, I was just like, this is ridiculous. It's so hard to find housing. And these parents just need to catch a break so that they can breathe and not be in a reactive mode so much that they can properly care for their children and eventually get ahead. So that's where the Lighthouse Housing Alliance birthed from. We just recently started a very new organization and we exist to break through the darkness of despair and provide a beacon of hope for families facing this housing instability. And, you know, we support vulnerable families. We're enabling them access to stable housing, equipping them in crisis to achieve self-sufficiency, and really working to break the cycle of this housing instability for them. And we'll do that by one of two ways, either short-term housing, which is anywhere from 1 day to 3 months, as long as they are accepted into another housing program. We see that a lot where they're accepted, but they're on a wait list for 3 months sometimes. Sometimes it's a week or two, and then they are couch surfing or can't figure out what's going on. And then the second option is we will eventually have a 1-year program with wraparound support with local organizations and also with the local church community coming alongside the family.
Anna Maria, if the listener wanted to get connected to Safe Families or to you, how can they do that?
Yeah, so they can go to safe-families.org, and there is several different volunteer opportunities that they can fill out an application for on the website. And then that will actually go right to us if you live in the Chicagoland area, or it will go to your local chapter. We are national. We did start out of Chicago, but we are national. And then somebody will contact you and share more information about that. If you just want to find out more and have a conversation, I would love to do that. You can email me at amattey@safefamilies.net. And that's M-A-T-T-E-Y.
Well, all of the information will be in today's show notes. Anna Maria, thank you so much for helping us uncover, you know, the things that we're possibly sweeping under the rug for ourselves and how that, you know, we need to uncover that rebellious spirit as well that we just kind of like push up against every single day. So thank you so much for your story and sharing with us.
It was an honor to be here. Thank you.
What a great conversation with Anna Maria, because she was able to really be honest and share, you know, those things that sometimes we don't really want to put out in public. And it's a constant learning process for ourselves of understanding our own rebellion, understanding the things that maybe we haven't really even uncovered within ourselves. And there is that journey and process in all of us. If you would like to connect with Anna Maria or learn more about Safe Families, everything will be linked down in the show notes. She would love to reach out and talk with you. And now we have two reflection questions as we kind of think about our time with Anna Maria. Number one, is there something that you have been sweeping under the rug that maybe you didn't recognize or you have not wanted to deal with it? Journal about that today. And number two, what are you putting before Christ? Anna Maria talked about codependency, and yeah, that's a big fancy word, but the reality is we are so codependent on these things in our life. So kind of walk through what maybe these codependent things are in your life that you are putting before Christ. One easy way you can support the Parable Podcast is simply by sharing it with a friend. If you could pass along this episode, if it has encouraged you, that helps people find out more about these amazing parable stories. And thanks to my technical producer of a husband for his amazing editing skills. I couldn't do it without him. He makes us sound fantastic. That's going to do it for today. I'm grateful that you took the time to spend it with me. Remember, your parable, it showcases how God is with you, even when you continue to sweep things under the rug. We'll see you back again next week on the Parable Podcast.